I'm alright. Yes. Yes. We're back.
It's your boy Z-Dog MD.
Here out of Studio Z with my boy. Oh, wow, guys. Listen, we spent this morning here at Z Studios creating an amazing piece of content that we're going to release after the show. It is me watching the Netflix documentary, What the Health, and responding. And I'd never seen it, and I wished I had never seen it because it was horrible.
It was a total piece of crap. You guys are going to love the commentary.
Oh, my gosh. It was like 20,000 dogs took a crap on this table. And I had to sit and smell it for like an hour and a half. It's amazing, but we edit it down so that you guys only get the most smelliest parts of the feces. what do you guys think of our new set? We're setting it up. We're gonna have guests here. It's gonna be a whole thing. Give us some feedback. Tell us what you think. We stole a plant from the lobby that's gonna have to go back or not.
Sorry, y'all.
But today what I wanna talk about, I wanna do a little experiment. These are my keys, in case you're wondering. I have a fob because I do. I wanted to read an article from NPR that I saw this morning, and I didn't read it, but I want to read it and respond to it for the first time with you. I want to give you my elephant reaction. I want to get your input because it's an important topic. Without medical support, DIY detox often fails. That's the title of the article. And I've had a lot of people message me, and you know, with this opioid crisis raging, how do you get people off narcotics in a sustainable way? Many people message me and say, you know, Suboxone, methadone, they are just a crutch. You need to go cold turkey. You
wait,
need
wait,
to stop.
Why are you talking about opioids? I thought detox was like for skinny teas and stuff like that.
Yeah, I get a detox cleanse, spinach and spirulina, and then. Yeah, anytime you use the word tox or detox, your hackles should be raised because it's probably quackery, as you'll see from the video we're gonna release today. But this idea of opioid detox, like they're trying to make me go to detox. I said no. That's not the song, is it?
No.
But this idea of going to detox and you come out better, right? It turns out, not that easy. Surprise. But let's read this piece because, again, it's a popular press piece, but often NPR in their health side has some good nuance in their article. So I want to read this with you guys, get your input, and talk about it. All right, here we go.
Before we do, we got a hater. I lost faith with you, dog, Lisa Michelle says.
Why?
Care to elaborate, Lisa?
Lisa, tell me why, because now my feelings are hurt. And when my feelings hurt, I get crocodile tears. And when I get crocodile tears, I show you that I have an access to personality disorder, likely borderline, because I also love you so hard. All right, let's read this. All right. By Elena Gordon. By the time Elvis Rosado was 25, he was addicted to opioids and serving time in jail for selling drugs to support his habit. This is a story we've all heard before. I was like, I have to kick this, I have to break this, he says. For Rosado, who lives in Philadelphia, drugs have become a way to dissociate from the reality that was life. He'd wake up physically needing the drugs to function. So here we go. We have a component of addiction in that he needs the drugs just to get through his day, to cope, etc. And he has dependency because when he wakes up, he has withdrawal symptoms if he doesn't get the drugs. So he needs them just to get through the day. His decision to finally stop using propelled him into another challenging chapter of his addiction and one of the most intense physical and mental experiences he could have imagined, detoxing. Now, this word detoxing is a little funky, right? Really what happened was, what they're probably gonna describe is his withdrawal from the drug. And we have seen this with a lot of different drugs. You can see it with marijuana, actually. I bet you didn't know that. So actually, you can have a kind of a THC withdrawal. With narcotics, there's a certain symptom complex. With alcohol and benzodiazepines like Xanax and Ativan and Librium and Valium, you can get another type of syndrome, and that can be deadly life-threatening, right? But let's keep reading before we get too much into that. The symptoms are horrific, Rosado says. There are recovery and treatment centers that can help people quit using drugs. In fact, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And in fact, there are a lot of people in Las Vegas who actually are in this sort of detox business. And they used to hit me up all the time when I was running Turntable Health. And they'd be like, hey, you know, you need some detox, man. We can get you that. We have a really nice facility. And like, yeah. And I used to get the itchies just talking to these people because they seemed to me quite squirrely. So where there's need, there's money. Where there's money, there's squirreliness, right? But not always, right? Obviously, I'm just saying this was some experience I had in Las Vegas. Now, this can help, but be expensive. And waiting lists for state and city funded programs are often extremely long. This is true. So people who want to get into rehab, detox, whatever you want to call it, medically managed withdrawal, it can be very hard, it can be expensive, and you can wait forever. Now, so can detoxing on your own be the solution, the article asks? In most cases, the answer is, guess what, Z-Pak? No. No. By the way, slighty funnier than placebo.
We have 1,000 of these pens, people. 1,000.
It's like the stamp with the little upside down plane that's now worth like $1 billion that Richard Pryor and Brewster's Millions mailed to get rid of some of his money. But those are my slighty funnier than placebo pens. Anyways, no, DIY detox, do-it-yourself detox is probably not a good idea. And this just resonates with my own experience as a clinician and also my elephant reaction, which is it ain't easy and you can put yourself in danger. So let's read this. In fact, a growing movement within the field of addiction medicine is challenging the entire notion of detox and the assumption that when people cleanse themselves of chemicals, they're on the road to recovery. Now, that resonates with me, Tom, because this whole idea of cleanses and detox is, in general, total BS. It's usually marketing speak for a bunch of people who know nothing about science.
But what about, like, when, like, the toxins, you know, they build up in your body because chemicals are bad? What happens then?
Right about then, I come back there and I just slap your face. Because that's nonsensical.
Okay, well, right. that's violation of my personal space.
Well, that's like your opinion, man. So, in fact, a growing movement within the field of addiction medicine is challenging the entire notion of detox and the assumption that when people cleanse themselves of chemicals, they're on the road to recovery. Now, I'm going to read a comment here. They all come in the ED, says Yana Creason, when they want a detox. And guess what? They are uninsured. So this is a socioeconomic issue. It's a logistical issue. It's a resources issue. And what does detox even mean? Let's keep reading. That's a real pernicious myth, and it has erroneous implications, says Dr. Frederick Bauer, president of the Pennsylvania Society of Addiction Medicine. So it turns out this guy has a career studying and taking care of addiction. We might want to listen to him. We might not. Depends on what he's saying, whether it agrees with my elephant or not, because I'll have a confirmation bias and just pick out the parts I like and hate on the parts I don't. But at the time, Rosado says he needed to end his longtime love affair with codeine. Wow. Logan, have you ever tried codeine?
No.
It's not fun. This guy was addicted to the least fun narcotic. Like, most real narcotics addicts list codeine as one of their allergies because they don't want the doctor to give them some freaking codeine because it's lame. So this guy's interesting already because he was addicted to codeine. And part of the reason is it's one of the easier things to obtain when you're in the clink. And that is the technical term for prison. So he had a long-time love affair with codeine, like OxyContin and morphine. It's an opioid. In jail, these drugs are easily available, Rosado recalls. See, I was right. I didn't read the article and I know. Science!
One more time.
Science!
Wait, no, wrong button, Z. Okay, do it.
Science!
There it is.
Okay, let's keep reading. We're having a lot of fun because we were in a good mood today.
By the way, last time I went to the doctor, they totally wouldn't even give me codeine. I was bummed. Yeah, because I want that cough syrup with the codeine.
You know, I remember learning in medical school, and this may be an apocryphal story, but that 10% of Caucasians are unable to convert codeine in the liver to the active form morphine. And so that's why a lot of people say codeine doesn't do anything for me or they don't want it because it doesn't work for them. Especially you, white man.
Interesting.
Yeah. Lori Boyd, thoughts on being drug-free because you're on methadone or Suboxone? We have many patients that are very agitated when we say they aren't drug-free then. Okay, we're going to talk about that, I think, Lori, because I suspect that this article is going to get into that. And if not, we'll talk about it. So, oh my God, it's the next paragraph. When he decided to stop, he didn't, this is Rosado again, our hero of the story. He didn't ask for help from the jail's clinic staff who could have given him medicine for withdrawal symptoms. Rosado said that if he took anything, in my head, I was like, I'm still using. That's how I was seeing it. So this is a common feeling. It's a common feeling on providers' parts, like, are we just substituting one drug for another? The difference is, it's gonna be much harder to overdose, you can do it, much harder to overdose Suboxone, methadone than it's gonna be on, you know, injecting heroin or prescription drug abuse directly. So there's an argument that medically managed addiction therapy is not the same as using, but then many people don't feel that way. So let's keep reading.
Z, you ever have purple drink?
Purple drink? You mean like cough syrup?
Cough syrup.
Scissorp?
That's scissorp.
Scissorp and I don't get along.
So it's called perp?
Mm-hmm. I've never tried it. Have you tried it?
No.
Okay, why are you even bringing this up?
I don't know. You're talking about codeine, Z.
Because of cough syrup with codeine.
That's all I know about codeine.
Logan is a little bit chopped and screwed right now, and he's carrying a weapon. That could make it really interesting. Please don't do any scissorp because, you know, you have guns. The first few hours were gradual, like the onset of the flu, he recalls, Rosado. But then he started sweating and shaking, his heart raced, and he started throwing up. About 12 hours in, Rosado said he was reminiscing about how pleasant food poisoning was compared to this. He says his stomach cramps felt like having Freddy Krueger inside you trying to rip his way out. I think a better way would have been like the alien's alien ripping its way out. But fine, yeah. Rosado, if you want to make a Freddy Krueger analogy, I get it. And this is withdrawal, guys. I mean, people say, and I've not encountered it directly myself, people say it's one of the most horrible, you feel terrible. Michael Brown says, sipping on that scissorp. Rosado couldn't sleep. He lay on the cold floor shivering. I had days where I felt like I wished I was dead, he says. Now you can see how hard it is to go through withdrawal, right? And why patients come desperate to the ER looking for a fix. My cellmate kept saying, look at you. Use a bag or go to the nurse, because he was throwing up everywhere, presumably. Over the next week, the intense symptoms slowly subsided. Over a week, he was exhausted, depressed, irritable, and sore. Then came the next phase, the temptation to slide back. It's a battle, Rosado says. He remembers a voice in his head telling him it would be so much easier to give in. Take something, take a little bit. He remembers the voice saying, of course, especially when you are suffering from addiction, it is so much easier just to take that pill than to suffer through, to plow through. And remember, there's a reason Rosado was taking the pill in the first place, and that is there's some hole in his life or some emptiness or something else that that pill is filling. And just taking it away yourself and detoxing doesn't fill that hole. That's why a lot of recovery programs, they try to find a substitute for that space.
That's true. By the way, people are saying that it's a
wow.
McLean.
It's got Grimace on it.
Anybody, anything with Grimace on it is okay with me. What were you saying, Tom?
People are saying don't look back at me because it's irking them.
You mean this?
Just look at me in the monitor.
You guys, this irks you? So now I'm your clown? I'm here just not to irk you? No, I'm here to irk you. I'm here to push your buttons. I'm here to make you sweat a little bit like poor Rosado when he was withdrawing. We are talking about narcotic withdrawal, and that's an uncomfortable topic. So, Tom Heineber. Okay,
was,
I won't look back at Tom.
It was intentional the whole time.
Do you guys like the desk? Was he sitting, or do you like him standing?
Yeah, let me know. I kind of like to sit, but if you want me to stand again, we can do that. Because, you know, I'm lazy. Please make us uncomfortable, says Sandra, just Sandra. We work on that. All right, let's keep reading. Then came the next phase, the temptation to slide back. It's a battle, Rosado says. He remembers a voice in his head telling him it would be much easier to give in. Take something a little bit. Most people can't tolerate detoxing from opioids without support or medications to ease with the withdrawal symptoms, says Dr. Kyle Campman. Hey, Ka. You think you know about addiction, Ka? He probably does because he's a psychiatrist who specializes in addiction at the University of Pennsylvania. Diarrhea and vomiting from withdrawal can make a person dehydrated, I've seen this, and can lead to severe complications, even death in some cases. So people who say that opioid withdrawal isn't life-threatening, that's untrue. It can be life-threatening. And Campman worries about big risks of patients trying to self-medicate to avoid these side effects or the drug cravings. Well, yeah. So this is, again, an indictment against DIY detoxing, taking off the medications by yourself and trying to power through it. If you're going to use the medications that a doctor would use to do detoxification, which, and I always put that in quotes because I hate that word, which might be methadone or buprenorphine, Suboxone, or even a blood pressure medicine like clonidine or sedatives, and we often use that for the physical manifestations of withdrawal, of many types of withdrawal. All those medications are dangerous, says Campman. So if you're doing it at home or by yourself in an unmonitored setting, it can be a problem. They can have adverse interactions with other drugs, and in the case of methadone, he says there's a possibility the person could overdose without physician oversight. Sure, you're not getting high, it's slow release, you take too much, it slowly releases, next thing you know, you're not breathing. So this is a problem as well, which is a sort of a common sense problem. But Campman's biggest concern when it comes to detoxing by yourself is the extremely low success rate. So the bottom line is, if it's not gonna work, if quitting cold turkey by yourself is not going to work, then why put yourself through the struggle if there are better ways to do it? That's the postulate here. So what bothers me most in thinking detox is adequate treatment is that we know that it doesn't work, he says. We have a long history of putting people into detox followed by a drug-free treatment that results in relapse in an overwhelming number of cases. So again, this piece seems to be making the indictment that non-medically assisted detox, where people just don't go on treatment after that, is going to fail. And if the patient goes back to using, there's a higher risk of overdose because their tolerance has gone down. We have seen that. So many times what ends up killing somebody is they have a relapse, they go back to their old dose of whatever they were doing, and they die because their tolerance has gone down. So they stop breathing, they aspirate, whatever their overdose parameters are. And that's the worst thing, because somebody who's been clean, they have one relapse and they die because of the relapse, which in the old days, that dose never would have killed them. Addiction, Campman says, isn't something you can just flush out of your body. It's a disease. Now, addiction specialists seem to agree addiction is a disease. Many people, especially even on my forum, seem to think it's just a moral failing and purely a choice. And I think it's very hard to treat and manage addiction and understand it from a place of compassion without invoking at least partially the disease model of addiction. That, yes, it is a disease, but there's also choice. There's also...
Well, the choice comes before the disease. So you make the choice to use that first time, right?
But then, you know, some people will argue that even during the disease, you know, people just see the behavior as choice. I see the behavior during the disease. Yes, of course, there's always choice, if you even believe in choice, which we'll talk about another time. But this idea that when you're addicted, it really isn't a choice. The disease is actually dictating how you behave. These intrusive thoughts, these cravings, these kind of seeking the dopamine, and then the fear of withdrawal. This is a real phenomenon, enough to destroy people's lives who had otherwise good lives. That's, in my opinion, that's not a choice. That's a disease asserting itself. It may have begun with a choice, it may have an element of choice in it, and we have to hold people accountable, yes, but we also have to manage it as a disease, otherwise we're gonna fail. That's the thing, we're just gonna fail. And if you're a person who says, well, it's a moral failing, well then, it's probably equally ethical to say, just let them die. And you may believe that. I don't subscribe to that theory. So, 3 years ago, Dr. Nora Volkow, director of the National Institute of Drug Abuse, told a Senate committee the same thing. She said, when people addicted to opioids first quit, they undergo withdrawal symptoms, which may be severe. Pain, diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, hypertension, tachycardia, which is fast heart rate, seizures. Medications can be helpful in this detoxification stage. I forgot to put it in quotes, detoxification. Easing craving and other physical symptoms that can often trigger a relapse episode. However, this is just the first step in treatment. Medications also have to become an essential component of an ongoing treatment plan, enabling opioid-addicted persons to regain control of their health and their lives. So, are we seeing science here, and this is true, or are we seeing the opioid addiction industrial complex that treats opioid addiction just keeping itself in business? I'm gonna say no. I'm gonna say we're seeing actual science here. Medication-assisted addiction treatment is not, in my opinion, in my elephant's opinion, in my scientific opinion, swapping one addiction for another. You are ending a very harmful relationship with an illicit substance with a dependency on the medical treatment for that. Very similar to the way you might be dependent on drugs for hypertension or high lipids or seizure disorder. And if you can eventually get off those drugs, great. But if it prevents you, if it puts your life back in order, if it restores your relationships, allows you to be productive in society, then that's a good thing, especially if you see opioid addiction as a disease model. Where are we here?
Let's see.
Doctor, do you want to read some comments?
Yeah, you want some comments?
Yeah, hit me up.
So Wu says, the first time you take a drug is a choice. After that, it's a disease. Other people say, you know, I see a lot of similarities in my food addiction and my dad's drug and alcohol addict. That's from Jocelyn. Some people don't like our set.
Yeah.
The set was expensive, so get used to it. Let's see.
This is an evolving set.
I feel addiction is an emotional disease. That's from Shauna. I lost the comment, but somebody said basically like, yeah, it's a choice the first time, but let he who is without sin cast the first stone. Because, you know, a lot of these, you try it as an adolescent. You know, you make dumb decisions all the time when you're an adolescent.
No, I mean, I think all those points have validity. Let's keep reading this article. So, however, this is just the first step in treatment. Medication, detoxification. Medications have also become an essential component in the ongoing treatment plan, enabling opioid-addicted persons to regain control of their health and their lives. So that's what we're talking about here. So Dr. Frederick Bauer goes further. He suggests that it's best to abandon the whole notion of detox. This is interesting. Period. Just no such thing as detox. I think the term detox has negative connotations, says Bauer, who has been treating people with addiction for nearly 30 years. It's also been involved, he's also been involved in a citywide task force assessing the opioid epidemic in the region. I think he's in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He says the focus should be on stabilizing the treatment plan, not on detox. This intuitively feels right to me, Tom. Bauer is the medical director at Kirkbridge Center in Philadelphia, a recovery center that has an in-house detox unit of 21 beds. But according to Bauer, the unit does a lot more than getting drugs out of a person's system. It's structured, he says, patients have reflection time. Their symptoms are monitored. They meet with counselors, come up with long-term treatment plans, and most importantly, they get medications like methadone to manage cravings. Some of the medications target the same receptors in the brain as opioids, but they do it for a longer period, so they need a long-acting opioid agonist, which reduces symptoms. Another option, Vivitrol, blocks the opioid receptors, which inhibits the person's ability to get high. So these are all in our armamentarium for treating opioid addiction. But Bauer says there's no one formula, and I like that statement because that's always true of any disease. We have to consider all the tools that are out there to support someone getting well. He says, Elvis Rosado, our hero in the story, the opioid addict, said he first developed his coping tools in jail. The bars protected him from the temptations of his old neighborhood and he found support groups and counseling. So he's a lucky one, actually, because it's a tough thing to get in jail, right, that kind of support. Still, he may be one of the few who tried detoxing on his own and succeeded, so it's the exception. It's interesting that they frame this whole article with the exception, right? Since his release from jail, Rosado has gotten degrees in mental health and social services and worked in treatment centers, so he's paying it forward. He now leads overdose prevention efforts for the Prevention Point Philadelphia, a nonprofit organization that provides prevention services across the region. Good for him, big ups. Rosado doesn't think his detox approach is for everyone. If we don't give individuals the time to start to have clear thoughts and put a plan together, getting the chemical out of their system, you're not doing them any favors. So again, this idea of detox, getting the chemical out of your system. Rosado also credits his own long-term success to very specific conversation he had while he was still locked up. It came during a phone call with a girlfriend. She goes, I'm pregnant. What are we going to do about it? And I said, we keep the baby. So that apparently inspired him to get clean. He recalls making a promise to himself in that moment to be a good father. And for him, at least, that worked. But he says his cellmate back in jail tried kicking the habit, too. And within weeks of being released, he relapsed and died of an overdose. And that's the end of the article. So, guys, let's talk about this. Cold turkey detox. Is detox really a thing? Is medication-assisted management of addiction a good idea and something necessary, or are you swapping one addiction for another? We'll soon get an addiction expert on the show and interview them and have this conversation. But for now, I just want to have our gut reaction to this article, and let's process it together because this is a good forum for that. So Lindsay Schmelzer said, I think disorder or syndrome is more appropriate than disease. Disease implies that there's an endogenous process causing the issue. So again, I think we're getting into semantics, but how we frame it mentally does affect our cognitive processing of addiction. So it is important how we talk about it. Jamie Giblin, Z-Dog MD, as a nurse and as an addict, I would be more than happy to discuss with you in the Z-Pack. It's been a living hell, but I don't believe in hiding it. Well, thank you for sharing, Jamie, and feel free to fill us in comments and further discussion.
I lost the comment, Z, but somebody said that, you know, why are we even talking about it when you basically did it in your Treat Yourself video about how we should be treating and, you know.
Well, Treat Yourself, I felt like, was our way, that video was our way of saying we need to have compassion for people who suffer with addiction while recognizing the crazy behavior they can have, that it hurts others. It hurts us as healthcare professionals because we feel manipulated and right. lied to. We feel like drug addicts. But then when we really drill down, this is a person who's screaming for help, who we are one of the few people who can help. And treating it as a disease model or as a disorder, as a syndrome, however you call it, we need to treat it with compassion. And it's tough when we're burned out with the behavior, right?
Shanna says, I'm impressed that this man was able to become a professional after being incarcerated. Not everyone is able to recover that way. Almost no one, I would say.
Yeah, but I have seen this. I've seen this happen. People really, they push hard and they make a second life even after prison, and they take what they've learned as a strength to build on and help other people. Those are people who find connection and purpose in the rest of the world. Those are people who recover from addiction. They find a higher purpose, and higher doesn't necessarily mean religion, although people like Alcoholics Anonymous have said they're always saying find a higher power. A higher power may simply be the connection you feel with other people. Say if you're an atheist, the purpose that you're here, even if you don't believe in God, you can believe in, oh, I'm here to do stuff, and that stuff is going to be help other conscious creatures suffer less, right? Let's read some more comments. Tara Martinez says, I believe it has to do with an addictive personality disorder. It could also be in our DNA. I think genetics are a big component of it. I think how we respond, like, you know, I've tried Vicodin. It doesn't do anything for me except for make me feel bad. It's not in my physiology to get addicted to that sort of opiate. But for many, it's the opposite experience.
Beth Hancock says, my first husband was an addict, and I felt like I had my own addiction when we divorced. It ruins your trust in people.
Mm.
And that's Al-Anon, right? Like if you have a loved one suffering from addiction, you know, it affects you so much.
Absolutely.
That you need to go to a program.
Oh my gosh. I get so many messages from people, family members of those who are suffering with addiction. What do I do? I'm so burnt out. You know, some people thank us for raising the issue. Some people are like, you're bringing up really painful stuff. And I've started to hate my family member, and this is someone who's deeply loved in the past by me because of the behavior, right? And I think I say it whenever I repost the videos. I say, you know, hate the game, but don't hate the player. Like, this is a person suffering, and you can hate the behavior and hate the manipulation without hating the human being who's struggling underneath. And it's hard. It's very hard to do. It takes a lot of work and patience.
Don't hate the player, y'all. Hate the game.
Scissor!
What?
I just like that.
Wait, there it is. The best detox.
The best detox is retox. That kid is on point. He is on point. He needs a tan.
Leslie says, people, this judgmental debate is useless. These people are now addicted, and now they are our patients, so we have a responsibility to try and help.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fact. I think being judgmental about it, it's a human nature, and we can actually understand why people would feel that way, and a lot of people are victims of this behavior, but it doesn't help us get them better.
Jocelyn says, I know someone who works in a Suboxone clinic. Sounds like they're doing amazing things for people who are ready to change their lives. I've been thinking of going to work for them. Very interesting. Now, Suboxone's actually harder to withdraw from than heroin, I've heard.
Well, now, here's the thing, you know, with Suboxone, I don't know enough about it, and I'm not an expert in addiction treatment, so I don't want to talk about it too much, but I'll say, we'll get people on the show, we'll get some comments, and we'll have this conversation because it's an important one to have. A lot of people are scared to use it because they hear that kind of thing and they think, well, maybe this is worse than the other drug. No, probably not.
As an anecdotal experience, I've seen friends go through both types of withdrawals, and the Suboxone withdrawal is longer and more severe.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting, and that's an anecdotal experience that you've had with your friends. All of whom are derelicts.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And I just made a judgment.
How dare you? It's not a moral failing. They're losers for other reasons.
Scissor! The first time you use it, it's a choice, says Marlene Mitchell. After that, it's an addiction. It's not a disease. Well, an addiction, we're arguing, can be a disease. Cancer is a disease. Cancer is not a choice. Using street drugs and alcohol is a choice. I don't know, because a lot of cancer, you know, so much of it is lifestyle related. So could you make, by extension, the same argument? I smoked, I ate crappy food, I ate grilled meats, which is a group one carcinogen according to the WHO. Like,
But you can't decide that, you know, you don't want to have cancer anymore. Like, an addict can decide, oh, I'm finally going to get clean.
Yeah,
like, that's my problem with that.
Well, I understand that. I understand that. But the thing is, they can decide that. But can they? Do they have the free will to do that? So this is the question. If you were to put yourself molecule for molecule in the addict's brain, you might find it impossible. It's just like if whatever you might feel you're addicted to, let's say it's like, you know, Starbucks Frappuccinos.
Or guns for Logan.
Or guns.
Or singing to strangers for Z.
Can
you
stop
shut your
me?
Whole timeline? That's not an addiction, that's a gift.
But tell me you don't go through a single day when you don't sing at a random person on the street
there
or
hasn't,
at Starbucks. Or
there, you know, I'm starting to think I may have a problem with this. Because just today I was at Albertsons getting some food for dinner, and there was an old lady checking out of the self-checkout, and she was like, and I went up to her and I had my little basket and I was like, and I'm here to remind you that the mess you left isn't going away. It's not fair. And literally, I'm just glad that she didn't have intact hearing, because I could have caused a stroke that day. And I couldn't help myself, Logan. It's not an addiction thing. It was a disease for me, bro. I just have to sing.
Rachel says, no one wakes up one day and says, I'm going to be an addict. You never know what happened to put someone on that path. People are quick to judge. All right, but what about this one? Let me just throw a sticky wicket in here.
Okay.
What about gambling addiction? Because we all feel like gambling addicts are losers.
Mm-hmm. Do we?
I do.
I actually feel like they have a disease.
Yeah, but like, let's say you're a gambling addict and you've completely destroyed your family's finances and ruined their lives. Mm-hmm. Do you have a lot of sympathy for that person? I don't.
I don't have sympathy for the behavior. I don't have sympathy for the outcome. I have compassion for the gambling addict, because nobody wants to destroy their family. Like, this is that, okay, if the person was a psychopath and they're like, yes, I'm going to gamble my family into poverty and let my child live on the street, that's evil. That's lack of empathy, lack of compassion. That person is a bad person. I don't know that that's the case in someone who's neurologically having this addiction. I mean, and that's me. Again, I subscribe to the addiction model disease model of addiction. By the way, I want to hear from addicts, or former addicts in particular. Do they feel it was a disease, a choice, or both? Let us know from the front lines. Or family members.
I just feel like the addiction rabbit hole goes deep.
Yeah.
Because you can say a lot of stuff are addictions, and then you could excuse a lot of moral behavior that way.
So Jane Verana says, what about Z-mom's gambling? So this is an interesting thing. First of all, don't talk about my mom. Second of all, so my Z-mom has come on the show and talked about just how she loves to gamble. Mm-hmm. And it's true. If she comes here, she will blow, like, and to her, a lot of money. Look, she's a doctor, but she and my dad behave like they're destitute because they're from India. So they're like, oh my God. She'll come back from the casino and she'll be like, I'm very depressed because I blew up $200 on the slots and I feel terrible. But for her, that's just as horrible an outcome as if, you know, we lost $50,000. And her father, my grandfather, was a serious gambler. Like, he probably had a degree of that addictive either personality or disorder, where if he lived in Vegas, he would have been broke. Luckily, he channeled some of that energy into being a great businessman in India. So, you know, it's a freaking gray area. Let's read some comments.
Well, we can talk about it a little bit because, you know, weed just became legal here, right?
Yeah.
So are you going to see more marijuana addiction and that kind of thing?
I think we're going to see dependency on cannabis from people who are using it as a crutch for something else.
What's your opinion? Is it a gateway drug, or is it just, it's a soft drug, so it's the first thing people do? I mean, what do you think?
This is tough. I'm going to give you my personal experience on this, which I've never told publicly. So I never did anything. I never tried any drugs. I never even drank significantly in high school, because I grew up in the 80s and Nancy Reagan was like,
nerd.
Just say no. I was a big nerd. I was Dungeons and Dragons, guitar guy, skateboarder. And my close friends in high school, just, they didn't do that stuff. We were all nerds. So, you know, we would do other stuff that wasn't drug related, but it wasn't about drugs. So I go to Berkeley, some kid's got a bong, and he's like, you've never gotten high, you need to get high right now. And the next thing I know, my face is on this bong, and I'm taking a monster hit.
Oh yeah.
The next thing I know, I am in an alternate universe. Like for me, for some reason, that THC molecule in a naive brain just made everything insane. Like I thought there was a fourth dimension that was like time mixed with space. I was hungry as hell. Music sounded like a religious experience. And that whatever hour high that I had made me think, first of all, wow, what has been missing from my life that I've never experienced this state of consciousness? And second, I was like, when do I try acid? Because that's the next freaking thing I want to try. So in a way, what that drug did was it allowed me to realize, wow, my mind is very sensitive to psychoactive compounds. And it allowed me to think, well, this wasn't that bad, so maybe LSD wasn't that bad, and maybe mushrooms weren't that bad. But I ended up stopping at that stuff. I never tried the hard drugs. I guess some people consider those hard drugs. But I never, you know, never did cocaine, never did heroin, never did any of those things, narcotics, because to me, I had enough education that I was like, you know what, I know my personality. The minute I try that, I'm gonna go down a path that's not good. And that was a choice on my part, but that choice was partially conditioned into me by years of upbringing with two parents who gave a F about my education and cared about me, and a lot of conditioning from science that said, yeah, there are drugs and there are drugs. So not everybody has that conditioning or that background or that physiology or that genetics. So was I lucky or was I moral or was I immoral? Who knows, right? We're human beings. We're going... we're standing on a rock that's hurtling through space. We're making decisions that may or may not be of our own authoring because our brain just works. And can we love each other and try to help each other when we're in distress? I think that's the real question.
I will say, like, based on your experience, I didn't understand addiction at all until the first time I tried cocaine. Mm. And then I was like, this shit is amazing.
Interesting.
Where do we get more of this? And can we do it all the time?
Well, and that's interesting to follow up with that. Jamie Giblin, our... former addict, I couldn't tell from the comment, who's kind enough to share her experience. In all caps, it was not a choice. Now, people will say she's rationalizing, and of course she's going to say that, but I think it's very hard to know what's a choice and what isn't until you're in the mind of an addict. It's very easy to judge from outside, but it's very hard to be that person. And molecule for molecule, you might behave exactly the same.
You know who's judging Z?
Who?
Nancy Reagan.
Oh, Nancy!
She sees you. Sees you, Z.
Oh, you know what? I still get the creeps when I see Nancy Reagan because I feel like I had a lot of guilt the first time I tried weed, Logan.
She knows.
And she does know. And it all brings it back now that it's legal in Nevada and I have like zero desire to get high because I have kids and a life and I'm happy and I've done that. So, but is that going to stop me and Tom from getting high on camera? Yes, because I also have a DEA license that I'd like to preserve.
I found a picture of Tom from high school.
True story. I liked it so much I like pretty much never did it again because it was scary how much I liked it.
Well, so you made a choice.
Yeah.
You made
a choice. Because I'm not, I don't have an addictive, I don't have the gene.
You don't have the gene? Didn't you say your grandfather is an alcoholic? Or?
Yeah, but I have strong moral character.
Is addiction a weakness?
Is addiction a weakness? It depends on how you define weakness. Is the propensity to diabetes genetically a weakness? Is a certain personality, being born with a certain personality, a weakness? Because remember, there's a good bit of your personality that's inborn, and we know this because you can separate twins at birth, raise them independently by different families, bring them back, and they share these certain core personality attributes. So, you know, there's a genetic lottery that we get that you're born with it. So is it a weakness? Depends on how you define weakness. I don't know. It's a good conversation, though.
Oriana says, my 14-year-old daughter was abused and is now struggling with addiction. She's self-medicating because it's hard to deal with trauma. There's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah.
And won't engage in counseling, though I've tried many different. It's heart-wrenching to want to help your child and not be able to. There are not treatment options that don't cost a fortune for youth in my state. And now being a single mother of four and a CNA at the hospital, no way I can afford help. I'm never going to give up on my baby, but addiction is a disease, in my opinion. Mm. I think, Oriana, that there are definitely probably some programs you can look into in your state that would help you.
Yeah.
Especially with a 14-year-old.
And, you know, and I've heard this story many times, people who are struggling with their children, with their loved ones who don't have the financial resources, and there's such a backlog of need for treatment. So we wish you the best, and get resources. And other people who know of resources in her state, please message her. because we want to support each other.
And just having money doesn't fix this problem, because I grew up with rich kids who were drug addicts.
Absolutely.
And they went to passages in Malibu, and they're still addicted to drugs, some of them.
Absolutely.
So money is not always the defining factor.
Agree. I agree with that 100%.
I found a more recent picture of Tom.
Oh, Logan, you are a savant, truly a savant.
Just on the 4th of July to celebrate my independence, y'all.
On that note, guys, I hope this discussion was helpful. Sometimes going through an article in real time and just responding to it can open discussion, and hopefully it triggers you guys to think about some things in a different way, or maybe reinforce beliefs that you've had. But either way, just having the conversation is important, and it's nice as a tribe to get together and have these talks. Now, I want you guys to tune in a bit, because we're going to post a video that you guys are going to like or hate. Either way, hit share on it. Hit share on this.
Oh, no, you got to watch it. It's so funny.
I really loved it.
Don't watch the documentary, What the Health. It is a total piece of garbage.
Oh, my God. It's garbage.
We wasted an hour and a half of our lives watching this thing earlier.
But watch us take it down, because you will enjoy it. And the stuff that's on the cutting room floor is even better. All right, guys. We love you. We out. Go. Am I? Lab is so wild. Uh-huh.